And then that,
ready? Good morning. I will officially call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, November 19, 2013. Welcome, everybody. First item of business, I would ask that you please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning again. I hope everybody's prepared for the snow that we're supposed to get later this week. I know our facilities director, Cal Pearson, is ready. Plows on the trucks, ready to go, right? Outstanding. First item is public comment number one. This opportunity for members of the public to address items on today's agenda. I do have a couple people who want to speak to specific items. We'll hold those for those items. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the board on anything? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes. And this is November 5th, November 12th, November and the 7th and the 12th canvas. Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Discussion, corrections, notations. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions. We have all items accounted for.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consideration of claims. This is my week. I would just point out it was $400,000 this week instead of $1 million. Wayne, it's your time in 2 weeks, so do a good job with that.
Okay.
A motion on claims.
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda. Please add utility permit 1426.
1426. Is that it?
That's all.
Move the consent agenda with noted changes.
Second.
Motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items. We have second consideration of Ordinance 224, amending the boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, Iowa, as referred in Section 8602 of the Story County Code of Ordinances, located in Section 18, Franklin Township, under the ownership of, sorry about this, Malini Anthronam, from A1 to A2, Leanne Harder. Good morning, Leanne.
Morning. As Chair Sanders just said, this is second consideration. We've received no public input since first consideration. I'd be glad to answer any questions the board may have.
Questions for Leanne?
Nope. None.
Okay. No questions. I will open the public hearing on second consideration of Ordinance 224 and ask if there is anyone who would like to address the board on this item. Yes, sir. Please start by introducing yourself for the record. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm Merlin Bowers. I'm with Ag Venture Growmore. We're involved in the purchase of this property. And I just wanted to ask if there was a possibility we could waive the third reading since there has been no objections. I just thought I would ask that at this time.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Seeing no one moving the microphone, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board for your pleasure.
Okay, I would move the ordinance number 224 as submitted and recommend waiving the third and final consideration for November that would have been set for November 29th.
All right, so we have a motion to adopt ordinance 224 and waive the third reading.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Ordinance 224 is passed, and there is no third reading. That is our final reading.
Okay.
Next item is second consideration of Ordinance 225, amending Chapter 86, District Requirements, and Table 90-1, Table of Conditional Uses of the Story County Code of Ordinances. Again, Leanne Harder.
And again, this is second consideration. This is just a quick recap, some proposed amendments to the Code of Ordinances, specifically in regards to the land development regulations. The majority of it is combining the C commercial district with the I-1 light industrial district and having one commercial light industrial zone district. And then
Which does not change any of the uses in either one of those. It just combines it into one.
It combines into one. It does change uses. What it does, it enhances the list of permitted uses available and for various uses that are in existence. And complementary to that, we're recommending some changes to other zone district names and then ancillary changes as a result. No public input since first consideration.
Okay.
I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions for Leanne before we open the public hearing?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then I will open the public hearing on Ordinance 225 and ask if there's anyone who would like to address the board. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board. Board, I would think that since we've received no comments, the possibility of waiving third reading is also
on the
before
table.
Us here.
Yep.
I'll move approval of Ordinance 225 on the second reading and ask we waive the third.
And I will second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Ordinance 225 is passed, and that is the final reading with the waiving of the third reading. That takes us to additional items, consideration of Resolution 1445, Appropriations Amendment, and our favorite, Lisa Markley.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we're almost halfway through the year, and we only appropriated 45% of the budgets originally when we started the fiscal year. A couple weeks ago, I came to you with the financial report, and in doing so, said that I would be coming to you with the next appropriation for the remaining dollars. What you have in front of you is the appropriation of 100% for all of the elected officials. I also did 100% for general county betterment and countywide services. And the remaining department heads are at 95% of their budget appropriated.
Which is standard practice for this board the last couple years.
Years, that's how we've been doing it, yes.
Sounds good.
Questions for Lisa?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry, I was just going to say, anything to add before we consider this? All right.
Move approval of Resolution 1445.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1445, Appropriations Amendment passes. Thanks, Lisa. Next item is consideration of plans and authorization to solicit bids for Phase 2 of the Dakins Lake Expansion Project. Mike Cox. Hi, Mike.
Morning.
A lot of excitement up in northeast Story County.
A lot. Very good. Well, contractors have been busy, as you know, wrapping up phase number one, and still a little bit of work to be done yet. However, that is going to be wrapped up ahead of time and ahead of budget. So that's good news. Now we're ready for phase two. Last night, the Conservation Board did make a recommendation to authorize letting of phase two. Pending your approval, we would let that project or open that project up for bids today, and bids would then be opened on January 14th at the Board of Supervisors meeting with consideration that week, and then come back to the board for consideration of approval the next week on January 22nd. High points of this bid project or this bid package. The cost opinion was such that we had to identify some alternatives in this bid package. We identified four alternatives. Two of those were alternatives that we had from the original bid when we let the whole project. The other two we added, and the funding that we have available for this project will cover the base bid. So, any questions?
Outstanding. I just want to congratulate you and the Conservation Board on working through this. I know we were disappointed when we tried to bid the whole package, and then we were excited when we bid just the dirt work portion. Hopefully, we're going to be excited as we bid this phase two, and we can get all our options done and worked into the available funds. So, thank you for your work. Questions or comments for Mike?
No, I would just, I attended the Conservation Board meeting last night, and I too was extremely pleased with the deliberation and the thoughtfulness as we took a look at the projects and where we were, and, feel that we have just an outstanding Conservation Board that truly is going about his business, keeping in mind some of the challenges that we have and making sure that available funding is in place, and having to phase this in is certainly understandable, but I think that the planning that is going forth is going to make us all proud. So I would certainly move that we accept the plans and set the opening for the bids for the Dakin's Lake expansion project for phase two, which would be starting as of today.
Okay, so we have a motion to solicit bids for phase two of Dakin's Lake expansion project.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Mike, anything to add? Thank you for your work on this. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Authorized to solicit bids.
Yep.
Thanks, Mike. Next item is discussion and consideration of draft capital improvement, the CIP plan, and public review process. Leanne Harder. We're seeing a lot of you today, Leanne.
Shelley,
could you hit the light, please? Thank you. I just have a few slides, but I do want to start out by acknowledging this. I'm here just the face of the CIP task force because I don't know why. I guess I'm here a lot. So, but I do want to acknowledge those members of the task force, both here with me as well as were appointed by the board, that have worked on this since July to come forward. Really, kind of exciting to me with proposing a draft CIP for public review. Mike Cox. And I know Mike's here, Cal Pearson, Lisa Markley, Barb Steinbach, Darren Moon, and then Rick was an ex officio member, and myself, and I don't think I missed anyone. They can throw something at me if I did. I just have a few background slides, and then I'll get into the heart of why this is on the agenda today. If you'll recall, your strategic plan here on the wall has an item that you would like to develop a CIP, and that would have the benefit of better scheduled public improvements that require more than 1 year to construct and provide an opportunity for long-range financial planning and management. The board's well aware of the different expenses you've had throughout the years for public improvements, acquisition costs. The Dakin's Lake project was on the books for 30-plus years, and we're seeing that come to fruition. Very exciting time with that. But this is a way to put those on paper and start planning accordingly, budgetary standpoint and programming standpoint. Three-prong approach, the plan. Two-prong approach, pardon me. The plan and the budget goes right into the programming concept. This is a process we followed, and this is in the draft CIP, so the public is aware of the process that was undertaken by Story County to come up with the capital improvements plan. First of all, we prepared an inventory of current facilities, those properties owned by Story County. Survey status, any previously approved projects, Dakin's Lake, the road grader lease, and then the phone system upgrade are the three examples of that. We prepared a financial analysis, reviewed and ranked requests submitted by county departments through forms that were officially approved by the Board of Supervisors. And with that, then, we were able to prepare the five-year schedule of projects, and then today presenting a draft CIP, not for your consideration, but for direction to send this forward for public comment. The CIP does run on a fiscal year basis, coincidentally with the county's fiscal year, July 1st through June 30th each year. It was a five-year program. Year one would start July 2014, and then year two, three, four, five, following that sequentially. There are terms and definitions outlined in the CIP, capital assets and capital projects. For capital projects, we did identify as a task force some numbers and figures, amounts to help guide those projects that met the CIP guidelines. If it's a total project cost of $25,000 or more for a new project, modification of existing project, or building maintenance, then it flows up through the CIP level. Otherwise, it's a normal budgeting item that comes forward from a department head or elected official to the Board of Supervisors. And then equipment, if it's a purchase of $75,000 or more. $75,000 for equipment, we want to make sure that the larger trucks, like facilities has to purchase and ancillary equipment that goes along with that, does not require CIP budgeting. That's a normal operational, almost year-to-year budgeting item. The time frame that we're suggesting, the task force obviously is presenting a draft CIP to the board today, and we're seeking direction to place the draft CIP on the website. I've worked with IT, and under the Board of Supervisors tab, drop-down tab, there's another drop-down tab that, if we get direction today, would go live next Monday, November 25th. Simply says CIP. We'll put available the draft CIP and then a comment sheet that would look similar to this. On the front, just area for feedback and general comments. Then on the back, the individual projects themselves, and then area for them to fill out. And then have that be, those responses would be due back by January 3rd of next year. The task force is scheduled to meet with the Board of Supervisors as you kick off your budget work sessions on January 6th. And then lastly, about a month and a half from that, you would be officially considering taking action on the draft CIP. These are the list of projects, and if you want to delve into greater detail, I can answer any questions or have task force members address those as well. But they were ranked and added through a very deliberate conversation by the task force, and we do recommend that these projects be incorporated. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Yeah, I'll jump in and start. And first thing I want to say is how much I appreciate the work of this group. I mean, it's no secret that Story County is blessed with great employees. These are some of the finest that we have. Really enjoyed being an ancillary part of those meetings and watching them work through the process. I believe that we've got the right people on this in from the right departments and offices on this. On this CIP group, and I'm really excited. The whole intent of this is to help us. It still rests with us at the Board of Supervisors to make all budgetary decisions, so every decision on here still rests with us. It's just giving us more information in a more timely manner, allowing us to plan our budget for multiple years rather than just the 1 year that we're dealing with every January and February. And it also is intended to make sure that the public and as importantly, our employees are aware of these larger ticket items that are on the horizon that we've got to deal with. I think it's completely appropriate. I think it's another step. It starts with the whole CPAT report that we got, and then it flows through the government restructuring committee that we had up to the goal setting. I mean, these are all starting to go together pretty nicely for Story County to continue to improve the way we plan and look out into the future with our budgetary needs. So, Leanne, thank you. Thank you to everybody here who was part of that group and worked through it. Questions for Leanne? We got a couple people who want to speak to us on this, but any questions for Leanne at this point?
Just a question for Leanne as well as to the committee and to the board. I, too, am extremely impressed with the thoughtfulness, the diligence, the planning that have gone through this. And having this in this format, assuming that everything is finalized a little bit later since it's in draft form for public comment, what I'd like to see at some point, and this is maybe for Cal's benefit, if the board would approve, is, again, a place for us to display, you know, this chart. You know, we have the capabilities of blowing it up a little bit so that not only will we as the supervisors be able to visually see where we are from time to time, but members of the public can also see those items, and we have a way of either checking off, you know, on that chart that it's been completed. And we may think about in a smaller version if there are some other, you know, really highly visible public places in some of our other buildings where a lot of public traffic, a smaller version of just showing, you know, this, having this on display, I think would really resonate with our goal of being strategic in our planning process and visionary in terms of looking at things over a longer period of time rather than reacting on a year-to-year basis. Just a thought that I'd like for you guys to take back to the committee and for the board to consider, you know, as we move forward.
Wayne, thank you for reminding me. Not only would we, based on direction from you today, have this available on the website, we would also have hard copies available and copies of this comment sheet downstairs and probably the when you enter the main space to this building. So individuals that are visiting here in person can take it and then send it back to our department, too.
Super. Paul, anything?
Just a, you know, 30 years in the sheriff's office, and I always told you you need to be proactive. Instead of reactive, you have a lot better results. And I think this is exactly the same thing here. We're being proactive. We're looking down the road several years instead of something comes up and it's like, you know, now what are we going to do? How are we going to deal with this? Now I think we've got a plan in place, and I think it's just a better way that we can do business and spend the taxpayers' money.
And last but not least, another thing to keep in mind, Leanne, is, and I know you don't like to get this type of recognition and credit, but to me, this is the type of thing that our co-star group that we award counties for innovation and thinking that might be something that the committee might want to consider submitting for a possible consideration to be recognized, because other counties really look at things like this and say, hey, wow, we can do that too. And it sounds like a neat idea. Then we could be a valuable resource for other counties as to how we do it. So I would ask us to consider maybe submitting this the next round for this upcoming year.
Okay. Leanne, stay close in case we get questions that we need you to answer. First one I have is Marty Chitty, who would like to speak to this. Marty, come on up.
Good. Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to say, as one of the members of the Government Restructure Committee, I appreciate the impaneling of that board and the fact that I see a good many of the things that we came to you here several years ago. You picked up and recognized as being worthy. You gave us full access, unfettered access to the county and its employees. I think that I appreciate that kind of vision and that kind of, and I will dovetail on several comments, the proactive approach that you've taken. I believe the citizens of Story County and their respective communities will be well served by that approach now and in the future. I guess my question is, looking at these things at first blush, how committed to you are you on the timelines here? Is this just kind of a working document that you have the ability to rearrange, or is this kind of set in stone?
Yeah, my feel would be it's a working document. I view this, Marty, very similar to how I view our five-year roads plan, which we deal with every year. I believe this would be I think the closer term things are, the more set in stone. If this were to be adopted, the closer term things get a little more set in stone. The things that are further out can move around, move up, move down as we go. That would be how I would view this document.
That's exactly how I would look at it.
All right. I didn't know if there was a prioritization on something that, you know, that's not here before us. But I'm glad to hear that you have the flexibility to realize that some things present themselves that might want to, you know, necessarily reorder it.
Sure. At the end of the day, Marty, I think it's important that we all understand that the Board of Supervisors has the final purview on all budgetary decisions, and that occurs every single year. This year, it's March 11th is when we set our budget for FY14. And up until that point, or for FY15, up until that point, FY15 is not set, and anything can happen.
You and I had a conversation here prior in regards to the last item in that on this list here, as I see it, the paving of 600th Ave. Could you flesh out if there was anything that you didn't touch on, or if there's anybody else that'd like to comment on it? Because I think going forward in the Nevada community where I'm from, that, you know, the 600th Ave is a real traffic.
It's turned into an artery.
Yeah,
it has.
It's not just a farm to market road.
And so to bring the board up to speed, Marty stopped me and asked me about why that was all the way out in 2017. Clearly 600th, now with DuPont going in there, 600th North and South connecting Lincoln Way to Highway 30 is becoming a bigger and bigger deal. What I expressed to Marty is my personal reluctance with 600th is not whether it's needed to be paved. I completely agree that it needs to be paved. It's that right now DOT has a plan to restrict access at the southern point of 600th where it meets Highway 30. And to me, to go spend $1 million to pave 600th only to have DOT come in and close down the road 3 years from now, 5 years from now, would be a huge waste of dollars. And so that's what I expressed to Marty. I don't know what you guys have to add to that.
that would be my reasoning exactly. I mean, there's the DOT tells us repeatedly that there's no money set aside for this project, and I think it's all tied together with the rearranging of the interchanges around Nevada. And it was my understanding that if this doesn't go, it has to go all together. So they're going to restrict access to everything out there except 580th is what they would like to do. And that wouldn't even look the same. They envision some sort of an overpass at that near that intersection. And if the county's not on board, then I don't think they have a huge interest in doing any of it. But I think it's all tied together, whereas the interchange gets changed in Nevada, that look changes, and then these roads get closed. Great access gets closed on these roads between Ames and Nevada. So I think it's either one or the other, and it's going to be interesting when the time comes whether or not we're actually going to be able to be on board with it. So
when was the last conversations you guys have had with the DOT? I know that they look at this periodically, I believe, on a
I think it was last summer I met in the engineer's office with one or two gentlemen from the DOT, and they had the aerial photograph and what it would, you know, they had the, I think, two different options for the city of Nevada to look at on how the interchange would look different out there.
And I believe there was a meeting here last week, Marty, that we weren't included in, but there was a meeting here last week, including engineers and the DOT, talking about the entire Highway 30 corridor between here and Marshalltown, as I understand it. So I think the conversations are ongoing. For me, I'm waiting for DOT to get to a point where they clearly say, this is what's coming, and then we're going to have to be ready to act on that.
Okay, that said, just let's stretch this out a little bit. I mean, if this is on your five-year plan and the DOT does not make a rendering up of a decision, are you still prepared to commit to paving this?
I wouldn't use the term commit. I think the point of the matter is we would analyze and evaluate what is happening in that particular area, the traffic usage, how things have been diverted as a result of the new businesses coming in, et cetera, and the amount of traffic. And then you've got to keep in mind, in order to secure the funds through the various funding sources for this, usually takes a few years for strategic planning and so forth. When you start thinking about the engineering aspect of that and then laying it all out, it's not something that you can just do in a very short term. But I think the fact that it's on the radar and is being considered, it means that we, along with the county engineer and others, will continue to evaluate this, working with the communities such as Nevada and the businesses that are going to be impacted by the flow of traffic. And this may be one of those that circumstances may cause us to change the timetable. But I think the option is certainly out there, and I don't think we want to close out any options at this point. But I hate to ever use the word commit.
And I understand that, Wayne, and your prudence is well placed in this respect. I'm just knowing that I believe that you're going to see growth in the corridor between Ames and Nevada.
I think a lot of it will depend on what happens. I think the ethanol plant, maybe a year from now. I think they're a little optimistic that they might be open a year from now, but
right.
or maybe more likely early 2015. So,
well, at some point, growth is the determiner on what you do.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I think sometimes if you don't have to spend $1 million, I'd encourage you not to spend $1 million. But I think at some point that, in respective of what the DOT is going to do, this may force somebody's hand.
Well, I completely view it that way, Marty. I think where it is on the timeline is a reasonable timeline for us to continue to talk to DOT and say, hey, we've got to make decisions, too, based on this, so we need you to keep moving down the road of making your ultimate decision. And I'm just like Wayne. I can't tell you that I would commit one way or another without knowing what the future holds for Highway 30. But I think what you need to know and what I'm hearing from these two is – we recognize that the use of 600 has changed. It's going to continue to change as DuPont and others go in along that corridor. And there's a reason that we designated that a farm-to-market road. That just happened this year that we designated 600 at farm-to-market. So I think we're serious about it.
Well, I don't mean to linger on this one, but I think that, you know, we have – these are good problems to have. And
when absolutely.
You're sitting here, you're going to have to make a determination to spend a lot of money one way or the other. But from what I see laid before the public today, you have certainly have my support. And I would like to think that, as a one last note here, on a TIF basis, this you have established a TIF zone for, and you have a 20-year timeline on it. Is that my And I know it's a little early in this, but here in the Nevada schools that we did up a study, and part of the levy that we have to compensate for on the TIFing that the city of Nevada does is 65 cents. And that doesn't really have any play on what I'm going to ask you, but it's just like, do you foresee this being a TIF zone that remains in place longer than the 20-year allowable legal statute allows you to do, or do you think this you might be lifting it, or do you foresee, you know, maybe I'm asking for too much too soon, but it's just like, you know, a TIF zone has its own built-in expiration date.
Yes.
And you have, you know, you're committing resources here on the front side of it, and you probably will be foreseeably through the entirety of that 20 years. Do you foresee that you might be adding TIF zones, you might be allowing this to sunset, or did you have to, if you even had this discussion?
Well, a couple things. One, hard to predict 20 years in the future, but I think we were very clear that when we established these TIF zones, they were 20 years.
Right.
Now, we just put some new areas in, just took action on that a week ago or 2 weeks ago, Jessica, is that right? And so that's, for those areas, that's a new 20 years. So we've got multiple 20-year lines
answer,
running.
That's part of my, that's so, an answer right there, I guess. But I know that it does kind of shade some other entities, but I think it's a worthy thing. So I
thank you.
Appreciate what you've done. I like the fact that we're doing things now and proactively such that I appreciate that you're making this part of your daily business.
Marty, we appreciate your input.
And Marty, one comment. You may want to pay close attention to the legislature and some of the discussions that's going to be coming down the pike regarding this and the role that counties will play with municipalities such as cities. You know, there is a lot of discussion about how TIF funds are used and whether or not what role the counties will basically play, whether or not we have to approve some of those projects. So just pay attention to what's being discussed in the legislature right now. I know that from our resolutions committee, we have, as association, the counties do want to at least be in a position to be aware of and some of the projects that are being proposed, because, you know, it wasn't until a few years ago that counties became very active in this whole process. It used to be more or less exclusively for cities, but yeah, and I do think that with the joint collaboration and cooperation of the local jurisdictions, we're in a great position to do what's best for the entire Story County.
Yeah, well, I think in Marty's position with the school board here in Nevada, he stays on top of TIF. I would just, and Marty, maybe you want to speak to this for a minute. One of our first TIF projects was the expansion of Country Club and putting in those bike lanes and the positive impact. Yeah, the positive impact that has on the Nevada school system. So
it does. That is a growth direction of the Nevada community, and I can't say at some point it might not be part of the city of Nevada. So.
Supervisor retirement home.
Thank you, and keep it up, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Marty. Next, I have Loris Olson, who would like to address us on this CIP draft.
Loris Olson, 1705 Buchanan. I have a couple questions. Did this committee keep minutes? Did this committee keep copies of the work product as you were working through deciding what went on the list or not?
Leanne, you want to come up and...
What we have the original applications. There are forms 1 and 2, I believe, that were submitted by the department heads or elected officials. And it was we're not a large group, so we were able to have the discussions just face-to-face. So we don't have a scoring sheet, or it was just verbal discussions. But we do have the original. We have the applications that everyone did submit.
Was the public invited to submit?
No. I don't believe, I mean, it was limited to county government. As
yeah. Capital improvement. Capital improvement. It's not, this is not money that's going outside Story County government.
My next question has to do with, are there projects that were submitted by the staff that didn't make it onto this list?
There were. Three or four?
Mm-hmm. Is the board intending to have a discussion? Now, I see there's January 6th, there's a session scheduled. Is that when the board will have the discussion about the merits of each one of these projects?
First step, Loris, was to run it through the CIP, get their take on it. Now it's to open it up to the public for comments. Then it's to bring it back and do a full presentation to the board with full consideration, and then the board will either adopt the plan as it's written, make alterations, do whatever. This is the very beginning of the process. Now is the opportunity for the public to comment.
Okay, that's where I'm really asking there for. And my last question would be, during that running through those, will there be an opportunity for the board to take a look at the projects that were submitted that weren't placed on there?
Sure, the board can look at
it. We can look at any of them, but I don't know why necessarily it would be of interest to me at this point. I mean, the committee looked at it, evaluated, and brought forth recommendations. That doesn't preclude other departments from resubmitting those at a later time for our consideration. This is going to be hopefully an ongoing type of way by which we will look at long-term projects, things that will require, you know, additional capital dollars above and beyond a certain threshold.
Sure, this is just a tool for the board to use in making decisions about where resources are allocated.
I think it's a great tool. I mean, I totally think that this is wonderful. Having seen this process go on with other government entities over the years, it's the first one that I've not seen where the public was not invited at the same time to submit projects. I'm also used to this type of group being more of an advisory group where it's more open. So obviously I can request the individual submissions from each one of the county departments, you know, to take a look at. But I am just wishing that this had been a more open process.
I don't know how much more open it can be than to say, here's the draft plan, please comment on it.
Well, to hear why each one of these projects actually made it and why the three didn't make it, it sounds like.
Well, and what I was going to say was the other thing that we have every...
Please speak on the mic, Mike, Lisa.
I think that we made it clear in the process that if the project didn't make it to the draft, every department was still more than welcome to bring it forward in their budget process.
Which, just to point out, the department people knew that, but the public didn't know that. Okay, and also, would you have entertained anything from the public, or are some of these from the public?
I guess I'm a little confused on what your question is. This was part of projects for the county, and so, I mean, do you have an example of something that you wanted to submit, or you know that somebody wanted to submit that didn't get submitted? I mean, we're talking about putting a roof on the CLP building.
Probably the opposite.
And building some new county sheds.
Well, it's the opposite. There's a project on there that seems to have been driven by the public, but somehow obviously came through your roads department, and that's the Grant Avenue paving project, the $1.7 million.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, as that has been talked about in the past, the public has been involved in that. And the board has not really sent any message to the public previously that was something that would or would not go on the CIP plan. Okay,
wait, Loris. It's part of our five-year roads plan. How can you say when we approve the five-year roads plan in April – that project's part of the five-year roads plan. How can you say that there hasn't been notice to the public that this was under consideration?
Let me rephrase. Thank you. Okay, let me rephrase that. The capital improvement projects, as I had originally understood, is more along what Paul was talking about. Okay, so I'd understood this original task force to be more among those internal ones, like the new roof, et cetera, not the paving projects. So that helps where I've made the differentiation. The only other comment that I really have is related to these bigger paving projects and the indication of TIF on there, and I'm interested in how Grant Avenue got on with the consideration of tax incremental financing. I've not been aware that it was considered an economic development project.
It says, to me, it says potential funding source. That's
okay.
A potential funding source. I don't think that means by any stretch of the imagination that because it's a potential funding source, it's a funding source that would be used.
Okay, thank you very much.
Anything else? Is there anybody else who would like to address the board on this draft capital improvement plan? Okay, opportunities for everybody in the public to comment on this. I think you said November 25th, if the board were to adopt this draft adopt putting this draft out for public comment, 25th is when you expect it to be up online?
Right, Monday the 25th, sooner if possible, but that will be the definite go-live date at the latest. I just want to touch on something I failed to that Mr. Chitty reminded me of in some of his questions. The task force is going to shoot me, but they already know this. Every year they're going to have to come back and reconvene.
Mm-hmm.
That's an expectation of the board. This is, as you said, this is not just a static one-time, we're going to adopt it and it'll go on the wall and we'll follow it. It has to be a living, breathing document. So every year the task force will reconvene, look at the existing projects, has something dynamic happened that we need to evaluate those. Solicit for new projects and then go forward again, similar process. Every year we have to do this.
Absolutely, and that's the right thing to do. It needs to be a living, breathing document that changes and grows and contracts and does all the things that it will do. Leanne, thank you again for your work. Thank you to everybody who spent time on this group putting it together. It's a great start. Board, do we have a motion to get it up for public comment?
So moved.
Second.
A motion and a second. Any further conversation, questions for Leanne? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Leanne, please put it up. Public, please comment on it. Next item is agency reports. Our friend Shirley Faircloth from Juvenile Court Services. Shirley, I always like it when you come to see us.
I always enjoy coming. And I'm trying to move to the technology world. And Shelley asked that I bring a flash drive. And do you think we could find a flash drive in the office? I think most of you have the handouts. I do have extra if there's any in the public that do want them. One thing that I did forget to send Shelley was the annual report from the
Board. Thank you. I'm going to take a 2-minute break while we're waiting for that to start up.
What I was hoping to do is really back up and just give the board and the community an overview of Story County Juvenile Court Services and youth programs that are not only funded by the Board of Supervisors, but also that are available to members in the community. So it is, I know that some of this will be redundant. Also had it. We've also had a change of staff in our office. This is the current juvenile court office staff in Story County. We're pleased to report that we are back to full staff. We have not been since 2009. In Story County, we have reduced a half of a juvenile court officer position because the caseload in Boone County has been high. So Arista Buckingham Wilson serves both Story and Marshall County. Tom Southard is our chief juvenile court officer. We have the districts in Iowa are divided up into eight judicial districts, so there are eight juvenile court officers. I supervise Story, Marshall, and Boone counties. Arista Buckingham, J.D. Rich, and Dan Giels are new to the Story County office. Arista comes to us from Youth and Shelter Services with a background in substance abuse, so which has been very beneficial. Dan Giels was a Marshall County Drug Court officer for 12 years, so he comes with a lot of experience, which we're certainly fortunate to have him. J.D. Rich has a mental health background, so we really have some expertise. And Jerome Rewertz has been with us for 9 years and is a solid person in the office. Pam Christensen and Danette Clark are technicians or secretaries, is what they were called when I started back in the work field. Danette Clark also does some specialist duties, which includes helping supervise and coordinate community service for the Story County clients that are doing work for either restitution or certainly just paying back to the community. And then Michelle Thorne is our accountant auditor. In addition to the juvenile court staff, we work closely with the schools. The Ames High School and the middle school have school liaison officers. They attend our weekly staff meetings. We're able to really coordinate case plans regarding our clients. And in addition, we have a school resource officer who is Brooke McPherson through the Ames School District. So juvenile court does help financially support the liaison position. The position with the Ames School District for the school resource officer, I believe, is a grant position. This really shows kind of what happens when a child is charged with a delinquent act. We, in juvenile court, get a lot of crisis calls, maybe family members that are experiencing difficulty with the child. However, we only have jurisdiction over those individuals that have been charged with a complaint or delinquent act. And in juvenile court, not everybody automatically goes to court. So the first meeting is an intake, which is typically conducted in the juvenile court office. We meet with the child and the parent and look over, is there probable cause for the charge, and then can we handle this informally, which would be without court involvement, or formally, which would be a court process. If we are able to handle it informally, we can provide supervision for up to 6 months, and typically that would be no further law violations, some community service work, could be family or individual counseling. We have Ravner's weekend program, Quakerdale weekend program, and a variety of other services, whether that's substance abuse or mental health. If the child denies the charge, we do automatically go to court. We do not determine innocence or guilt. If the child goes to court, then they do have to be represented by an attorney. And at that point, we don't have jury trials in juvenile court. A lot of the kids kind of come in with that TV version. It is held, the hearing is held in front of the juvenile court judge. The judge would hear that information and make a decision. This flow chart just really shows once we send that referral to the county attorney, the left side is as if there is a finding of guilt, then we'll move to a dispositional hearing. Those formal probation conditions would be similar to what I talked about, but they could include things that they would include that an informal would not, would be an out-of-home placement, whether that be a residential treatment facility or placement at the state training school. And then on the right side, if there's an individual that is 16 and over, we believe that because of prior services or the seriousness of the charge, that we would not have the length of time available in juvenile court for rehabilitation, we could make a recommendation to district court or adult court. This is a three-year comparison of complaints in Story County, and you can see that that's going down, which certainly is a positive thing for not only our clientele, but as a resident of the county.
What do you attribute that to?
Diversion programs, more evidence-based programming, being able to get into families earlier. I would certainly thank the Board of Supervisors for funding. I work in several counties, and we're able to do more proactive. You know, we've heard that talked about earlier today in other meetings, and because of that, we're able to get those services in before those problems compound. Of those, though, and I know I've talked to the board on several times about we need to get back to our regular staffing levels. And so you look at this and say, well, why do you need more people if you've got less complaints coming in? And what we are seeing are kids starting at a younger age, more severe mental health issues, higher risk or higher need. So this allows us to spend more time with the families and really provide those services and intensive supervision. This is a copy of the complaints for Story County. This is just through January 1st of this year through the end of October. As you can see, you know, the majority of the referrals are that, it says other public order. The majority of those charges are disorderly conducts. So some of those are within the school, some of those are out in the community. Assault charges and then substance-related charges are the bulk of what we're seeing. The bottom part of that is broken down into gender for our referrals. And then the next sheet, and I do have some that are larger than this if you need a larger copy, are these are just broken down into age range. The diversion programs that we're using through juvenile court, and I do, when we think of diversion, those would be children that we're not seeing. These are kids that we are seeing. Every individual that is charged with a complaint in Story County has a face-to-face intake, unless we do get some children that are charged here that are either out of state or out of county, we refer those to the county. But otherwise, everybody is coming in face-to-face for our substance abuse education class. Those would be typically clients that are charged with the first offense, possession of alcohol under legal age, or possibly possession of drug paraphernalia. And Youth and Shelter Services provides that class. The client and the family are responsible for paying for the cost of that class. The shoplifting class is provided by Kevin Duncan. He's a private provider. And once we have 7 or 8 kids on our list, he'll come over to Story County and provide that class. Again, the family is responsible for paying for the cost of that class. Our anger management class, we've just started here in Story County within the last 2 months. Eric Whedon is our client community service officer, employed actually by Central Iowa Detention, but he works out of our Marshall County Juvenile Court office. And so there's no cost to families for this. It's a one-night class, and it's first-time disorderly conducts or simple assaults. We have a variety of community service work sites in Story County. Typically, that would be at a nonprofit agency. Also do allow children, we have a restitution program, and kids can work community service in order to pay back their victims. And then we do frequent urinalysis testing. We have a contract through our office that covers the cost of that. We do have the weekend offender program. The girls is at Quakerdale in New Providence. The boys is at Rabner's in Fort Dodge. This is utilized for both informal and formal cases, so both non-court involved and court involved clients that have violated terms of probation, or maybe they've come back frequently and it's just increasing. What can we do, hopefully, you know, to prevent court involvement? It really has reduced our number of court referrals for some of our informal cases to provide some consequences to the client, hold them accountable. During the weekend program, they'll work on life skills. Community services is part of that. And then there's also packet work, you know, working on thinking errors, typically assignments like that. We do use tracking and monitoring in Story County. Tracking, we have individuals that are actually employed through Central Iowa Detention and assigned to Story County cases. We have a 3-tier tracking procedure on that. So depending on the level of intensity, it would vary on the amount of face-to-face contact that they have. But these hours really are an extension of the juvenile court officer, so the evening, weekends, those hours that were typically not in the office. We also use the electronic monitor and the GPS. Addition within the last 2 years has been a nice way to enhance supervision and monitoring of our clients. It has also allowed us to return some individuals from detention, which is certainly a cost that the Story County picks up, and so it really reduces the cost for clients that need that higher level of supervision. Functional family therapy is offered to Story County clients. Initially, when we started this, it was only for juvenile court clients. However, we have opened it up to community. It is an evidence-based practice. It serves, you can read, the families with youth ages 10 to 18. It is short-term, so 12 to 15 weeks. We have built in the contract some booster sessions, so we can do those as needed. It does address a wide range of issues, so whether that's family conflict, substance abuse. Families really like this service, really meeting the family where they're at and moving them forward. And the rates that we're seeing for success are 85% and plus, which really is amazing for that. So we're just very happy with this service. Juvenile court also has a rehabilitation contract. Youth and Shelter Services is the contract holder, but these 17 agencies are part of that contract. They provide in-home and family counseling under this contract, and we can also do groups. So we have done aggression replacement training groups in Story County. We would like to see that expanded. The problem with our 8 ART groups is we do need a minimum number of children, and our caseload, you've got kids starting and ending at different points. We have attempted to coordinate with the school. It works easier in the middle school from a scheduling standpoint to get that in, but it's a work in progress, because we don't want to be pulling kids out of class to attend this. So we'll continue to really explore how we can enhance that service more. Child Welfare Emergency Services is a statewide initiative. Youth and Shelter Services is the provider for our area. Referrals can only be made by law enforcement, Department of Human Services, or Juvenile Court Services. Really looking at ways that we can not look at getting kids system involved, and so not having to get a court order for that placement in shelter. They can only be held for it's 23 hours and 59 minutes, so I say 23 hours. The problem with this program is transportation is not included. So, for example, if I have a client that assaults a parent, the parent's uncomfortable providing transportation to the shelter, then it may be difficult to get them to the service to provide the mediation. We've been fortunate here that law enforcement is willing to transport when they're able, but sometimes there's situations going on that they're not able to do that. So that really is something that every time we get a surveys after we use a service that I always send back in, we need to provide transportation. It does hinder this service being an option for families at times because of the transportation. Wanted to talk a little bit about what happens with children that are not involved with Department of Human Services or Juvenile Court. And we are getting the word out better, but I've made some school presentations and found out that really the systems to access services have changed, but the education to providers or to the school personnel has not kept up with that. And so schools are able, sometimes they're our first contact with children and family that are in crisis, and if the child is on Title 19, they can get BHIS services, which is a behavioral health intervention. I've got a list of Story County providers. This is not an exhaustive list, so I may have missed somebody on here, and certainly we'll be updating that. I did a presentation yesterday and have asked for some additional feedback. But just letting schools know that we need to get this information out to those families that are in crisis. Mental health services in Story County. We've talked at with this board about the mental health services, and really we're seeing more clients at a younger age that need services. So when I made the list, we are fortunate here that we do have many providers. Again, it's really just kind of the waiting list and where are we at with that. As a side note, one of the attachments to your packet today was the Children's Disability Services Work Group final report, and I just got this copy yesterday, so I've not had a chance to fully read it. So I apologize that I don't have specific recommendations to you, although I wanted to get it into your hands rather than waiting for 3 months and make sure that you're aware it's on the website. This is the report back to the legislative body as far as their specific recommendations. So I do have questions, and we'll continue to monitor the recommendations regarding the integrated health homes and what exactly roll out like. So I will be presenting updated information to the board as I learn more on that. Story County Board of Supervisors, you're very familiar with these programs as you fund them, but as I speak to the public and present this, I really want them to be aware of the amount of services that you provide for the county. The first two, and actually the first three, are mandated services. So the Iowa Juvenile Home for our delinquent girls, and we have some China girls that are placed there now. I do have a report, the final report from the Iowa Juvenile Home Task Force, and that is included in your packet. They have, as of last Friday, they had a total of 22 kids at the facility. 12 of those are China girls, 2 are China boys, and 10 of those were delinquent girls. And that's down from about 57 that they routinely have. I have more questions than answers as far as long-term planning for the juvenile home. I mean, lots of rumors floating around. From my standpoint, certainly it appears that they are moving the boys out of the facility that will strictly be a female facility only, which from juvenile court, we wouldn't have any objection to that. You can really do some specific gender-based treatment, which is a positive thing. But there does need to be a placement of last resort for delinquent girls. The legislative code doesn't outline a state training school for girls per se, like we do for the boys in Eldora. However, the juvenile home typically was what we saw, that placement of last resort. That's something that will need to be addressed in the legislature. And then my other concern would be that the children that they're moving out of the juvenile home, that we're finding appropriate placements for them on a long-term basis. My concern would be some of those individuals have a history of running or have a long history of mental health or multiple placements, that those China individuals are not becoming part of the delinquent world because we don't have that appropriate funding. So that's something that we will continue to monitor. We have asked, or will be asking, the governor to be part of that process and be able to have some input from the juvenile court world in ongoing discussions. And then the other issue in the report that was put out, there was a perception that juvenile court officers might be negligent in monitoring of clients that were placed at the juvenile home, and we strongly disagree with that. We do meet with children in placement face-to-face at least once a month and believe that certainly if they would look at those juvenile court records, they would find that to be the case. The services, you know, when we talked about the reduction of the number of clients that we're seeing, I really attribute that to the services that you're given for the non-system children and family. You have always been, as a board, very proactive for children and families within the county, and that shows. And then I've just kind of listed some of the programs. I know you've got the background, the detail information, and then we'll currently be working on the budget for next year's services. Story County DCAT, this is just an overview, really is monitoring child welfare dollars and those juvenile justice dollars. We have been able to expand some programs within the county as a result of that DCAT funding. And Rick serves on that board, and we really appreciate your input and expertise. Really, when we look at the programs that we're funding, some of those are pass-through dollars, so we don't have much say as far as how we're spending those dollars. For example, our Girls Weekend Offender Program, the Story County holds that contract that serves clients within our 22 county area. We do typically give some money to the DCAT program for unallocated funds. It can be determined how they want to use those dollars locally. But because of the coordination, we've been able to have several projects, the Bringing Families Forward, the Parent Partner Support, Faces of Ames, the Family Fest, and the Safe Seat Project. So we continue to look at what are those gaps of services and how best serve Story County.
Board, I'm the designated motion maker for that group. Shirley's the chair, and I just help her keep the meetings moving.
We moved them pretty quick. The Psychiatric Medical Institute for Children, or PMIX, I've just given you an overview here. This really is for juveniles who are diagnosed with mental health disabilities. This has been a service that families can access without the being system involved, without being involved with juvenile court or Department of Human Services. However, we recently ran into a case where Magellan denied a certificate of need. So long term, we're not sure how that will impact. We've had, for example, children referred, maybe out of charge out of the school, or it was a situation at home that escalated into violence. Young really see them as more of children in need of assistance. medical treatment and not delinquents. And we have diverted those families, helped work with them to get into a PMIC facility. And so we're not sure that we're going to be able to continue that process. We're hopeful, but we continue to have some ongoing discussions with Magellan over that particular funding issue.
What was the rationale behind denying it?
The certificate of need was not enough to say that they needed the PMIC level of placement.
But it always has been.
It always has been.
Okay.
Oh, good rationale. No rationale that I could understand.
You answered that for me.
Okay. This is just an example of a certificate of need, and you can find this on the Department of Human Services website, but just to kind of give you some background information. The next slides are just the PMIC facilities that we do have in the state of Iowa, and then what level of clientele that they each serve. So I'll just run through those. And then I've included the website, so if you do have any additional questions or information, please, you could either give me a call or go to the website. A lot of times, you may get questions, you know, if an emergency occurs, who do I contact and how do I get a hold of folks? If it's a DHS case or a child abuse concern, it would be contacting the child abuse hotline. We do have individuals on call for Story County clients or Story County concerns, which they would get back to you. I also talked a little bit about the child welfare emergency services. We also have Lutheran Services in Iowa that provides crisis child care, and I've included their number. Law enforcement does have the authority to place on a law enforcement hold at Rosedale, and they do utilize that option. And then Rosedale Shelter also accepts parent placements from Story County residents, but just a reminder that families would need to contact the shelter first before driving their child over, making sure that we have a bed available. We do have transitional living programs, so these are for students aging out of the juvenile court system. I've just put a few that are really closest to home or closest to other services that would help support that child. And then I just want to give a special thanks that if it wasn't for Jeremy Linsmeyer, I wouldn't have got to the PowerPoint level. Danette Clark does my data gathering. And then obviously the Story County Board of Supervisors, Tom Southard, our chief, and Story County DCAT, because without the commitment to the families, we would not have these programs available. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Shirley. Thanks for coming. That was highly interesting. I appreciate you doing that.
This is outstanding for me, Shirley. As you may know from past years, I was heavily involved in the Juvenile Justice Committee at the state level, having served on that committee, and most recently on the State Implementation Committee. And because of the statewide effort that is going on throughout the state in the juvenile arena, our State Implementation Committee has found that we don't need to continue to meet. And a report has been made to the governor this year. Jeff Chalkmeyer out of Sioux City has chaired that particular group. And it was really interesting to see all of the things that we're doing here. But I'm sure that we will see that there are similar examples happening in other areas as well. And I was particularly pleased to see the report from the Children and Disability Service Work Group. This has been talked about at all the Mental Health Commission meetings and where we were because of what's happening with regionalization on the adult community. Very little discussion is ever mentioned about the juveniles. And, of course, thanks to George Blitzos, he always brings this up in every chance he gets. But I'm pleased to see this report, and I will certainly want to take a look at that as well. And again, I'd like to just, you know, acknowledge and thank Supervisor Sanders for his role with the DCAT board. I think us as a Board of Supervisors having some direct connections with agencies such as this does help us frame the whole understanding as to what we're trying to do at the local level to help our young people. I would mention to you, just recently we had a Justice in Story County Forum that was put on by the local NAACP chapter, and one of the members in the audience talked about the teen court. And I found out that this was something about 20 years ago that did happen in Story County, and for some reason it didn't continue. But I think you may be hearing about working with our juvenile court judges and so forth, maybe an opportunity to re-engage a discussion about whether the teen court would be something that would be applicable here in Story County. I just wanted to acknowledge my appreciation for this report and all the work that you and staff have been doing, and we're very fortunate to have you. So thank you for what you do on behalf of our young people in the state of Iowa and especially in Story County.
Thanks, Wayne. Very nice. Paul, anything?
Thanks a lot, Shirley.
Shirley, thank you. Have a great day. No departmental reports, no other reports. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Very quickly, I met with Ron Christensen yesterday, and basically we highlighted the meeting pretty much centered around just some ongoing discussions about software needs and other things, and it some of the challenges that we have in moving forward with community life, and just trying to stay abreast as to where he was coming from and so forth. And we'll continue to have updated reports with him throughout the year, and many of you will be involved in that at a later time. We talked about some of the things that happened at the fall school with him, and so I think the whole area of mental health services and what role the county will play as we move forward is going to be a topic of discussion for some time. And then last night I attended the Conservation Board meeting, excellent meeting as I alluded to earlier. We talked about some of the change order needs that will be coming forth to the board at a later time. While we went out for bids here, we will be getting a recommendation at a later time for consideration of one of the change orders, which will be an adjustment in payment. But the funding is captured in through the funds that are already been allocated, so it won't be anything in addition to that. But and then we spent a considerable amount of time going through the conservation budget that will be brought forth to us during the budget work sessions. And I was very appreciative of the thoughtfulness that went into it. And I assured them, while they had a lot of things in there, just expect that we will go through it with a fine-tooth comb, with a different set of eyes. And we may not be moving forward with all the recommendations, but I think they really did a good job in putting together a budget. It is going to be a little bit higher than last year's budget. There are good reasons for it. However, they know that they will expect us to ask the tough questions as we go through that process.
Regional mental health meeting was here yesterday. Anything that we need to be kept abreast of?
Not at this time. It was an excellent meeting. We approved several things that was on the agenda that was pending. Recommendations from the fiscal finance committee brought forth some budgeting recommendations, some case management information, and some updates on community service, which were all adopted unanimously by the board. And we did table one action simply because we still needed additional understanding about the support intensity scale. But it was a very engaging group. I think I wanted to also report that last Friday at the ISAC Fall School, John Grush, the chair of the advisory group for this member of the CPCs, spoke along with Bishop, I think, from Doug Bailey, excuse me, from Hamilton County, and they just did an excellent job in sharing with other county supervisors where we were as a region and some of the successes that we've had. So I think that we're getting a lot of contact from other regions about some of the positive things that we're doing. So
I keep hearing, Wayne, that you guys are being recognized as kind of a model of best practices for this new regional system. And so I want to compliment you and that entire board on the work you're doing. That's great to hear. I know that it was no secret that I was really apprehensive about this whole move to regional mental health. I felt like here in Story County, we had a system in place that Story County was comfortable with. We were filling the needs that the people of Story County deemed were important, and I was highly concerned about this move to regionalization. I'll tell you that those concerns have largely been dismissed. Based on the work that you and that regional board are doing. We've got some tough decision points ahead of us as a board of supervisors as we make the full transition on July 1st, 2014 to the regional board, most notably CLP. But I'm so appreciative of you guys' work. And it, you know, it really makes me proud that you guys are a model that other regions are trying to follow. So congratulations and thank you for that.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Nope.
Paul, anything?
Squaw Creek Watershed Management, this afternoon at 1:30.
Exciting.
Stop down.
Exciting stuff. Anything else?
Nope.
Nothing from me. Public forum number two, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. Board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address the board? Yes, ma'am. It is still morning. Good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to formally introduce myself to the board. My name is Jennifer Davies. I am the Economic Development Coordinator for the City of Slater. The second hat, or one of several hats that I also wear, is I am the new chairman of the Story County Economic Development Group.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So I wanted to thank you so much for the support of that group, continued support. Drew's on board as well, and there's discussion of how he's complementing some economic development and working with all of the small communities in Story County, so we appreciate that. I wanted to also get a little bit of feedback. There's been, from you as a board, there's been some discussion of how this group, Story County Economic Development Group, could expand their input and doing more things with economic development as a for the county as a whole. So I would request that perhaps we could have some kind of meeting or open discussion about what you envision that group doing, more hands-on, more activities.
If I could just suggest, Jennifer, I think that's a great idea, and I'm so appreciative that you're here. Board, for your information, if you don't know, Slater, through Jennifer's work, is one of those small towns that gets economic development. I mean, they are not love any way that the county can help Slater, but the fact is Slater doesn't need a whole lot of help from the county. They know what they're doing in economic development. And Jennifer, I'm really appreciative that you're taking on the lead of that board that Mark Jackson board has led for years. I am the representative from the board, is currently the representative of the Board of Supervisors on that group. I would suggest that you and I start to visit with a few of the key players on the board. I know that Drew is going to be really active with that group, and we've still got to define how all that works. And then we get it on an agenda for the board to fully address at a later time.
I guess I was wondering if there is discussion amongst you as a board of what you would anticipate us doing and being active in, or are you okay with us as a group getting together and brainstorming some ideas, some thoughts, and bringing it back to the board?
Yeah, and since we've got to be careful on what we comment on and don't comment on, I can absolutely say that since I've been on the board, there's been no real discussion of any change in makeup of this Story County Economic Development Group. As chair of this board, I know that I would welcome that group bringing forward any recommendations. It was what, Howard Hammond and a group of people kind of put that thing together in the late 80s. And so I think it's completely appropriate if that group wants to work through making some recommendations back to the board. And how about if we just leave it at that today, and you and I can visit more about that. Thank you very much. Glad you're here. Please come back anytime.
Yep. Great. I was going to ask you where'd you grow up and whether or not you were a Cyclone fan, but I just didn't want to put any pressure on you.
I grew up in Eastern Iowa.
Okay.
That answers the second question.
That's good. That's good.
Not entirely, because actually I'm kind of one of those divided people. I grew up in Eastern Iowa, but graduated from Iowa State.
Oh, so. All right. Hey, you got it both covered. All right. Well, welcome.
Depends on how you answer the question. You can say, I graduated from Iowa State.
Yeah.
Announcement for the supervisor. Wayne, anything?
No.
Paul?
We got an email yesterday from Farm Bureau about a upcoming... Exactly what is it? It's a seminar on drainage districts in Des Moines, and it's on the 3rd of December, which is a board meeting day. So I think if you guys can steer the ship without me.
I think with your role on Squaw Creek, your role in drainage, I think it's key. If you
so, I'm going to let Jan know at Farm Bureau that I'll be attending, and so then I won't be at the meeting on the 3rd.
Okay.
We have something else on the night of the 3rd.
We have something that afternoon, I think. But I'll be back. Is it one? I think we meet with the librarians at 1:00.
Right.
So, scheduled to be over.
Yeah, we've got something that evening too.
That's the drainage in State Center
on the 3rd. I thought that was the 10th.
I don't know.
Check calendars.
I think
there was something on that night. I know so.
There's something on the 3rd that I think I'm going to miss if you guys can attend it. Okay, we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
We're glad to let us know. We can look to see.
No announcements from me. Nothing further. I'd take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
The 3rd.